little ride.
Now you can share the topics that drive the discussions of your favorite talk shows with TalkStream Live's topic-driven talk radio.
We gotta talk. Take a drive.
List and promote real-time talk radio topics, or post the topics that you want to hear. Hot topics are tweeted and retweeted, and include simple click-to-listen audio links. The future of talk radio is topic-driven talk radio.
That's what I call real drive.
Available now at TalkStreamLive.com.
He became a millionaire by the age of 30, but ended up in bankruptcy, losing it all by the age of 40. The amazing story of one man driven to the brink of death after becoming the victim of an embezzlement scheme. After planning his own suicide, he turned to God and discovered a secret so powerful that it changed his life forever. How to Pray for a Financial Miracle is more than just one man's story of beating the odds and rebuilding his life after a total financial collapse. It's a book that reveals a life-changing prayer method that anyone can use to find hope during life's darkest financial trials. You will learn how to enlist God's help in solving your financial problems. The biggest prayer mistake most people make when approaching God with a financial need. How prayer can provide you with immediate answers and direction to your most pressing financial issues. How to Pray for a Financial Miracle, an Amazon.com bestseller from James L. Paris, the editor of ChristianMoney.com. How to Pray for a Financial Miracle, available in paperback or for Kindle from Amazon.com. You're listening to Jim Paris Radio.
This is Jim Paris Live, your source for money and political conversation from a Christian perspective. And now your host, the author of more than 20 books, and the editor-in-chief of ChristianMoney.com, James L. Paris.
All right, good evening and hello, everybody. Let me check something here. There we go. I've been having some problems with my headphones. For some reason, have been making it sound like there's a problem with my mic, but it's not my mic, it's my headphone wire here, but we've got that fixed. What a crazy weekend that I had this weekend. It was about a month ago I decided to do this, but I decided to go ahead and replace my hard drive on my computer. And I got all the parts together, everything I needed, the special software and all of that, and I was going to do it this weekend. And I decided to go ahead with that, and one problem led to the next, and it was a real nightmare the whole weekend trying to get this worked out. But if you've never done that before, it's probably something you may want to bring an expert in on. In my own case, I did take a computer repair class last year. And I learned how to open up a computer and do some things. As I explained to one of my friends today, I learned just enough to probably cause damage to my computer. But the good news is I successfully replaced my hard drive. I went from 160 gigabyte hard drive, which they told me 4 years ago when I bought the computer, and this guy actually built this computer for me, custom built it. He said, "You'll never use this." And I've heard that so many times before. People tell me, "You're never going to use this entire amount." So I went crazy this time, and I got a 1 terabyte hard drive and put it in there. And I cloned the hard drive, so everything that was on my old hard drive is now on my new hard drive, so I don't have to reinstall any programs or anything. Make a long story short, about 3 hours ago, everything came together, and I was able to reboot my computer, and it's like a brand new computer now. So super exciting. We're going to get into a lot tonight. We've got a huge show for you tonight. My guest in a few minutes is going to be Brian Zimmer, and Brian is the president of the Coalition for a Secured Driver's License. And I heard him on a national show a couple of weeks ago and immediately called my producer and said, "We've got to get Brian Zimmer on the program," because when you hear what this guy has to say tonight about what's happening with driver's licenses across the country and identity theft, it's going to be shocking to you when you hear what he has to say tonight. So don't miss this. It's going to be one of our most important shows of the year. So many things going on. Those of you that follow me on Facebook and Twitter know that I've been talking a lot lately about what's happening with Bitcoin. And right now, I'm watching this on my iPhone. I've got an iPhone app here. And Bitcoin is at another all-time high. Last trade on Bitcoin, $169. $169. It's going off the rails. It's unbelievable. And if you don't know what Bitcoin is, you want to find out more about it, I do have a new website that I published a couple of days ago. You can get there by going to BitcoinValueUSD.com. BitcoinValueUSD, as in U.S. dollar. That's BitcoinValueUSD.com. And we've got a chart there of the current price movement. And there's also a video embedded, which is an audio of the podcast that Bob Yetman and I did on Friday. We did an entire, about 45 minutes, all on the topic of Bitcoin. Also, I'm going to be doing a special free workshop this Wednesday night on the topic of Bitcoin. And if you want to get in on the workshop, the best way is to get on my email list over at christianmoney.com. So if you're not already on the email list, I want to recommend to you that you get over there tonight to christianmoney.com, add your name to the email list so you can be notified with all of the details and the link to register for the free workshop on Wednesday night. It is free, but we are limiting it to 250 people. So we're going to have plenty of space, but believe it or not, that space does go very, very quickly. I also do have a brand new video available on Amazon on the topic of Bitcoin, and you can find it by just going to Amazon.com and then search for Bitcoin, B-I-T-C-O-I-N, and you'll see it in the results. It's a video. It's an instant video. You can watch it over your computer, or if you have a Roku device or Apple TV, you can watch it on your TV set. It's a 46-minute video, and it's available for a rental price over at Amazon of $1.99. And speaking of Amazon, my new book continues to do very, very well. In fact, I was really encouraged the other day to hear of a bookstore that just stepped up and made a very large purchase of the new book. And we're excited to see. We don't know what bookstore it's going to be in yet. We just know that a bookstore stepped in and made a very large purchase. And we were told it will be in a major nationwide chain here in the next couple of weeks. So we're waiting to find out where it's going to be. But the book continues to do very well. And if you'd like to grab a copy, it's called How to Pray for a Financial Miracle. And one of the things I'll tell you about the book, a lot of people believe the book is about praying for a bag of money to show up, and that's not what it's about. The title's a little bit misleading, but it shares my own life story of becoming the victim of an embezzlement scheme, losing all of my money, and how the Lord brought me back to where I am today through prayer. And that's really the short version of the book, and you'll really enjoy it. I think it's discounted now because it's been on a couple of different bestsellers lists. You can get it for around $8.50, I think, over at Amazon.com. Also, we continue to appreciate the strong support that we're receiving from those of you that are shopping with us. And how this works is, instead of going to Amazon.com when you're going to buy something, what we ask you to do is to type in your browser, shop.christianmoney.com. When you do that, you'll still show up at Amazon. Everything's exactly the same. All the products are the same. All the prices are the same. The only thing that's different is that by getting there by typing in shop.christianmoney.com, Amazon will give us a small percentage of all of your purchases. So if you spend $100, I think we get $4 or $5 back. It varies depending on what you buy. But this last month, we had so many people use shop.christianmoney.com. We were able to put in brand new TV lights here in my studio, which now gives me the ability to really create professional videos. We got a bunch of new cables we needed for our broadcast suite here. I got some new software. I got the brand new Dragon Naturally Speaking. All of that was all paid for. We didn't spend anything for that. It was all paid for through our credit at Amazon.com. So please continue to help us. Shop.christianmoney.com the next time you're planning to buy something over at Amazon. Shop.christianmoney.com. We continue just for fun to watch the price of the Bitcoin here in the studio. Last trade on the Bitcoin, it's almost at $170 right now. So this is going, it's going crazy. And again, for those of you, who don't know my own story, we wrote an article at christianmoney.com on Bitcoin And that article was published back in October. And I thought, well, you know, I'm writing this article. I need to put a little bit of money in. So I put $20 into Bitcoin back in October. And right, and that was when Bitcoin was at $12. So I think that $20 is worth almost $300 right now, the $20 I put in. And some people say, well, is it really worth that? I mean, what can you do with it? Well, I can cash it in for U.S. dollars anytime I want to. Or I can use it to buy stuff online, which there's tons of stores now accepting the Bitcoin. So we're going to be doing the workshop on Wednesday night about Bitcoin, digital currency, and getting into some really neat stuff on that. So again, if you want to be invited to the workshop, you've got to be on my email list. Make sure you're signed up over there at ChristianMoney.com. All right, well, let me go ahead and bring my guest on here. Let's say hello to our guest tonight, Brian Zimmer. Brian is the president of the Coalition for a Secure Driver's License. Brian, are you there?
I am here.
Good to have you with us, sir. And I'll tell you this, I heard you on a national show a couple of weeks ago. I don't know if it was Laura Ingraham. Was that the show you were on?
I was on Laura Ingraham, yes.
Okay, that's where I heard you then. And I was just fascinated. In fact, I pulled off to the side of the road and called my producer and I said, book Brian Zimmer. We've got to have this guy on the show. And your organization is the Coalition for a Secure Driver's License. And my producer was very careful to coach me. She gave me this whole printout that you sent us, and she said that what you folks are involved in is what's happening on the state level with driver's licenses, and that I'm not supposed to get into just the generic idea of identity theft because that's not what you do. So I hope I've been properly briefed on all that, but I'm shocked.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Go ahead, sir.
Well, that's you're exactly right. We started in 2001 with the idea, and I was not with the organization at the time. I was doing something completely different. I was actually working for the Congress as an investigator. But the organization started with the idea that they could accomplish something on the national level, and they soon realized that driver's licenses are virtually exclusively a state responsibility. And the states have pretty much full freedom to do what they want to do. And there was a huge variance from state to state. So the organization started the idea of simply researching what each state did because nobody was doing that. And no one knew when the 9/11 terrorists were able to score so many driver's licenses and state-issued IDs from so many states, how that was so easy. Because frankly, the average citizen doesn't contemplate those things. The average citizen gets one driver's license from the state in which he lives, and he renews it. If he moves to another state, he dutifully goes down and gets a new driver's license. But there are a whole bunch of folks out there that don't dutifully do those things. They actually take every advantage of this, the individualism and the somewhat lack of communication from one state to another about driver's licenses and IDs.
And I remember I was thinking about this before the show. I was doing my prep time on this. There was an episode of Happy Days where some of the characters got a fake driver's license so they could drink before they were old enough to drink.
Absolutely,
and,
right.
And it used to be kind of borderline harmless fun. And I don't want to say that's harmless fun. Maybe I shouldn't say it that way, but it was a funny storyline on Happy Days. But some of the stuff that you get into here that people are able to do with a false driver's license is really unbelievable because the crux of the matter is that a state-issued ID is considered pretty much good as gold as far as identifying yourself. And like you said here in your intro, from one state to the next, there's a variety of different levels of screening and quality control that are done. Tell me the story. I heard you share this on Laura Ingraham about there was one character that had, 15 or 20 driver's licenses they found him with at one time?
Well, let me just move to a better example than that, which was not, this hasn't been on the air before. Indiana, 2 years ago, found a professional identity thief, and they found him because they added facial recognition to their driver's license process for new folks, and that is to record them. And they started working with their system and looking at their own data record system, and so they brought up, they used the facial recognition software to match a particular individual And he showed up with 137 different state-issued driver's licenses and IDs.
Wow, did you just say 137?
137, right. And he's in prison, of course. It probably will be there a very long time. But his game was, and he won't do it in Indiana anymore. I'm sure when he gets out, he will go to another state where they are not so careful. But
it gives a new meaning to the phrase back home in Indiana.
It sure does. And what he would do is he would carefully study people. About a third of them were people he knew personally. And he had no compunctions of robbing people that he knew. In fact, he was an equal opportunity thief. But his MO was to obtain people, actually, you could say stalk them, both in person and through the internet, not by hanging around their house or following them in the mall, but by remote means. And he would obtain their fairly highly personal biographical details, sometimes from going online and looking at people. People are naive about what they allow to be put online. And some people are very enthusiastic about telling everyone about themselves. And, of course, that makes them targets for identity thieves. But he would then, once he had the information, the Social Security number, the other things he had, he would go down and he'd get a new driver's license in that person's name. And he would tell them that he had moved. And that is, he would say, you know, I'm Joe Schmo, and I'm getting a new driver's license because I've moved addresses and I want my driver's license to correctly reflect my real address. And so the DMV would be, okay, they didn't bother to pull up the image of what they had on file and look at the guy across the line from him. So he had that down to an art form. Sometimes he'd wear a disguise, but generally it was just the same sort of portly, semi-balding fellow, looked quite benign. And he lived for years without a job, just by creating first the driver's license, and then he would similarly change credit cards, etc., and take people in small amounts. So I'm going on too long about that one case, but it's a spectacular example of what's out there.
Yeah, it's amazing to me what a person can do with a phony driver's license. And one of the examples...
Wait a second. No. They're not phony. They're valid.
Okay, fair enough.
It's very important difference for your listeners. People think that the newspaper reporters do this all the time, which we will actually go online and or send notes and say, you erroneously described it as a phony ID. You can drink with a phony ID. You might be able to buy tobacco with a phony ID, but if you're going to be a real identity theft, you need a real ID in somebody else's name.
And when
you
I go to
a validly issued one.
And when I go to the airport and they take a look at my driver's license and the hologram that's inside there, and they're checking me out, and then they let me through security, there's a sense that, wow, this is a real secure process here, because, like you said here, clarifying, it's not the driver's license that's fake. It's actually a legally, legitimately issued driver's license, but obtained under false premises.
Under fraud. Obtained through fraud, yep.
And some of the things that you pointed out in this piece and in the interview that I heard, you know, a person, let's say they live in Florida and their driver's license is suspended because they're not paying child support, or maybe they're a multiple repeat offender, drunk driver.
That's what
they do is they just drive up. You know, I'm about less than 2 hours from the Georgia state line. So they just drive up to Georgia and they get a phony address up in Georgia, and now they get a Georgia driver's license, and they come back to Florida, and they're driving on a fully legal driver's license. And I was shocked that there's no coordination between the states, where you would think there would be some shared database where if somebody's license is revoked in state A, that they could not go to state B and get a license that easily.
Well, since I'm on a radio show and we're trying to entertain your listeners, let me give you a spectacular example of where somebody was gamed on this, and the person who was gamed at was actually the head of the Maine driver's license office, and it seemed that he was in Boston celebrating St. Patrick's Day. This happened about six years ago. And he ran into a nice young Irishman there who told him that he was a college student who was unable to get a driver's license because he, according to the college student at least, he said that Massachusetts wouldn't give him one. Now, in fact, if the Maine DMV director had any brains, he would have known that Massachusetts would give a driver's license just to them or to anyone compared to state Florida. But he didn't know. So he said, well, come up to Maine, and I'll actually help you find a temporary address, and you can get a Maine driver's license. We don't have any of those rules because Maine happens to be the only amnesty state. That is, I'm sorry, the only you've heard of cities that won't enforce immigration laws? Well, Maine as a state won't enforce immigration laws. They've had
really
policy.
The entire
yep.
state is considered like
right.
a safe haven area for
right.
the
uh-huh.
illegals.
Yep.
Okay.
And they've had that in place for many years.
Wow.
And they still have it in place. 9/11 didn't faze them at all, despite the fact that Muhammad Atta actually left from Portland, Maine, on his way to Boston to hijack a plane and drive it and crash it in the tower. Didn't faze people in Maine one bit. Anyway, so this DMV director helped this young man to get a temporary place in Maine. He got him a driver's license, and within one day of getting a driver's license, he used that driver's license to buy a gun and, guess what, hold up a bank about 2 miles from the DMV where he got the new driver's license.
Hmm.
He was not the brightest guy because although he had a Maine driver's license, he had, of course, a Massachusetts car. He also had a Massachusetts driver's license. What he was up to was getting a Maine driver's license so he could buy a gun in Maine, so he could rob a bank in Maine, and flee back to Boston. Now, as Irish crooks grow, he wasn't the brightest because banks' cameras, and that any bank robbers listening to us should be aware that banks have a lot of cameras these days, other parking lots, correctly filmed his car in the Massachusetts plate. The bank went to the Massachusetts DMV and got the registration for the license plate. The Massachusetts police went down, arrested the guy, and the guy told him this bizarre story. Needless to say, the DMV director of Maine didn't keep his job. But it was a spectacular example of somebody really not doing their job. I mean, if there was a Clown of the Year award, I would have to say the Maine DMV director certainly should have deserved it in 2007. But, I mean, for your listeners' benefit, that's not how most DMVs do business, and certainly not how Florida does business.
And if you're just tuning in, this is Jim Paris. You're listening to Jim Paris Live. My guest is Brian Zimmer. He's the president of the Coalition for a Secure Driver's License. And you may have never heard any of this stuff we're talking about tonight because I had not heard it until I heard Brian on a radio show a couple of weeks ago. Just shocking things that are happening with people's ability to get driver's licenses, illegal immigrants, people getting multiple driver's licenses, people using driver's licenses in the name of children. They're stealing children's identification. We're going to get into all of this. If you have a question tonight on this topic, identity theft as it relates to driver's licenses or any issue related to this sort of thing, our phone number is 888-287-3316. Maybe you have a story to share regarding something along the lines of a driver's license obtained under fraudulent premises. Well, we'll call it that. 888-287-3316, the number to dial. Before we get to calls, Brian, much of the materials that I received for tonight's interview have to do with identity theft of children. And this is something that, you know, you hear about it, that kids are having their Social Security numbers stolen, you know, little children that are, you know, 3, 4, 5 years old. But
that's
you think correct. You think what could someone do with a 5-year-old's Social Security number or identity? And let us know what, give us the overview on that.
Well, we're the only nation of the advanced economic nations that does not have a national or state birth registry. Now, what's a birth registry? Well, a registry is a place, in conventionally, we would think, in state government, where every new baby's birth is recorded and their information, including their biographical parents, and this is done so, theoretically, it would be a good idea for the states to do this, so that they could keep track of who lived in their states, and they could make sure that that child's welfare was looked after at some point in time. But we really don't have anything like that here. We do, of course, have a death registry. Every state has a death registry, so it's as though states worry more about you when you're dead than they do when you're born and a baby. And Crookes figured out long ago, but the problem has gotten much worse the last 10 years. And part of that is it's simply much easier to find out both locally and remotely about new babies because babies' births are normally noted in community newspapers, some of which are online, some of which are can be obtained for free or a conventional local subscription. So that makes an excellent shopping list for somebody who needs to take on a new identity because their credits run out or they've, as you mentioned, might be a multiple offender. And that's where we see it. What brought it to our attention was way back in 2004 and 2005 began to pick up that there were more and more fraud cases where people were arrested after they had accidents, at which point the police had their identity checked and determined that it was not, that person was driving with a child's identification, sometimes their own child, but more often a child that they didn't know and whose parents didn't know them.
Now, you can take a child's Social Security number, get a driver's license in their name, and a kid is 5, 6, 7 years old, not even knowing that someone could be out there actually borrowing money and creating
right.
quite a substantial credit report that at some point is going to become, I would imagine, a very bad credit record.
Well, there's only one state that's actually taken aggressive action on this, and that's Utah, and that's because they discovered they had quite a few children who had mortgages, all kinds of fantastic financial obligations that, of course, they knew nothing about, their parents knew nothing about, and that it can be very costly for the parents to resolve these problems. And in some cases, the parents, if the parents are poor, they simply don't resolve it. The child has to pick it up when the child is 18 or 19, a young adult, and has to begin trying to correct all the garbage that's out there in their name that they have nothing to do with.
I can only imagine some young kid, 18, 19, maybe they're applying for student loans. Maybe
right.
they're trying to buy their first,
right.
starter car to go off to college, and then all
That's
of a
exactly
sudden...
Exactly right. That you are exactly when they find out.
And so they find out about this, and it's not something that can be reversed overnight. The process can take years, folks, to deal with this. Let's take a caller here. We've got Marie with us. Marie, you're on the Jim Paris Show, and my guest is Brian Zimmerman. Go ahead.
Hi, Brian.
Hi, how are you?
And Jim, thanks. Thanks, it's a really good show. I had a question about, since you're kind of segueing into the ID theft realm here, what are your opinions on ID theft insurance?
Okay, excellent question.
That's a good question. The answer is, it's getting a lot better. There was a time that ID theft insurance had such high deductibles and or was so poorly described that you didn't really have much hope of redeeming yourself if you, in fact, bought identity theft insurance and had a claim.
Mm-hmm.
I recommend to people that before they buy any of the advertised identity theft insurance that they check with their own insurance company because for 5 or 10 of the majors, it's a less expensive purchase to add it to your homeowner's insurance policy if you already have one.
And we put an article
up. Homeowner's policy.
Yeah, we put an article up at ChristianMoney.com, too, about 3 months ago. And, folks, you can get that by going over to blog.ChristianMoney.com, where there's actually a procedure where you can put a lock on your credit file, and then you have to have a special secret PIN code to access credit. So there's certain things you could do on your own, but yeah, the jury is out. You hear good things, you hear bad things about the identity theft programs that are out there. Some people say they're too expensive, but you're making a good point. A good friend of mine is an insurance agent, And he told me the price is coming way down when you add it as a rider to your homeowner's insurance policy. Brian, we're going to put you on hold. We've got a break here that's going to be about 4.5 minutes, so you can stretch your legs and get yourself a new cup of coffee or whatever you're drinking there tonight. And we're going to take a break, and we're going to open it up for some more phone calls. If you've got a question on identity theft as it relates to driver's licenses, lots of great stuff still coming. Give us a call at 888-287-3316. Or we're taking questions again tonight by email, because I know a lot of you are listening to us over your computers. The email address, jim@christianmoney.com, jim@christianmoney.com, or again, the toll-free number, 888-287-3316. I'll be back with my guest, Brian Zimmer, president of Coalition for a Secure Driver's License, right after this short break. Hi, this is Jim Paris, editor-in-chief of the website christianmoney.com. If you are interested in learning some new strategies for generating online income, check out my free training schedule at jimsfreetraining.com. That's jimsfreetraining.com. Whether you're just looking for part-time income or to build an internet business that can replace your full-time job, check out this free online workshop coming up this week. Register now at jimsfreetraining.com. The workshops are free, but are each limited to just 250 people. So take a minute now and reserve your space for my next free online workshop. That's jimsfreetraining.com. jimsfreetraining.com. Are you tired of hearing how the economy is doing so badly and how there are no opportunities? This is Jim Paris, and I want to share with you an opportunity that I first learned of a little over a year ago, right here in my own neighborhood. I was out walking my dog and saw someone cleaning a foreclosed house. And I struck up a conversation with them and actually found out that there is a business opportunity of cleaning out foreclosed homes for the banks. And these people don't make pennies. In fact, some of them make as much as $1,000 to $1,500 for one day of cleaning out foreclosed houses. Now, what's really neat about this opportunity is that the foreclosure crisis isn't going anywhere. So this is an opportunity that's going to be around for years to come. It's an interesting business opportunity, one that I think really does deserve your attention. And there's a website that you can go to get all of the details on this opportunity. It's called foreclosurecleaning.us. Now, maybe you want to do this just part-time, maybe just on the weekends or in the evenings. It's an opportunity that is very unique, and with everything that's happening in the economy today, it's something that's actually growing and expanding while many other things are drying up and withering. It's a unique opportunity, one that I think will give you a chance to maybe become self-employed, get out of the rat race, an opportunity to get into a whole new line of work. And it doesn't take very much money at all to start a business like this, and it doesn't take very much training. After all, you're just doing basic cleaning. To find out more about the exploding foreclosure cleaning business, check out the website foreclosurecleaning.us. That's foreclosurecleaning.us. Hi, this is Jim Paris, and I want to share with you something really unique that I ran across recently. It's an idea that I think would be very, very interesting to many of our listeners. How would you like to get paid to travel internationally and actually live in a foreign country for maybe a year or even longer? It's a unique opportunity, and it doesn't take a lot to get involved in this. The opportunity is that of teaching English as a foreign language. Now, I'm going to give you a website here that you can go to get more information on this. It's called MakeMoneyTeaching.us. That's MakeMoneyTeaching.us. Now, at the website, you're going to learn all about a unique opportunity where you can become certified to teach English as a foreign language. Now, you don't have to go back to college, and it won't take you years to get this certification. In just a matter of a few weeks, you can become certified to teach English as a foreign language. There are organizations that will actually pay you and actually pay your transportation costs as well to bring you into a foreign country. And you might live there for a year or longer. Many of the arrangements even include paid housing. Now, if you're someone that doesn't want to travel internationally, you can also take this same training and use this credential to teach right here in the United States or even over the internet using Skype. Take a couple of minutes today and check this out. It's definitely a very interesting opportunity that I think deserves your attention. Again, the website is makemoneyteaching.us. That's makemoneyteaching.us. All right, we are back. My name is Jim Paris. I'm the editor-in-chief of the website christianmoney.com. We get together on Sunday nights, and we do the program live. And tonight my guest is Brian Zimmer. He is the president of the Coalition for a Secure Driver's License, sharing with us really some pretty shocking stories about what's happening around the country and how easy it is for people to get multiple driver's licenses in other people's names, doing all kinds of illegal things, including identity theft, et cetera, et cetera. And we're taking your calls tonight. The number is 888-287-3316, 888-287-3316, or we're taking your questions by email, jim@christianmoney.com. jim@christianmoney.com. Brian, I'm looking here at your report that I was sent, and one paragraph I have highlighted. In 2002, and this is the last year that these figures were made available, the Social Security Administration says that 9 million W-2s with incorrect Social Security numbers landed in their suspense file, accounting for $56 billion with a B in earnings, or about 1.5% of total wages. I'm assuming those are illegal aliens. Would I be correct in that assumption?
About 80% of them probably. I'm very familiar with that story because the only reason that information became available was the congressman became very concerned about. His name is Jim Sensenbrenner out of Wisconsin, and he had had constituents complaining to him in Wisconsin about this. And so we sent a letter to the Social Security Administration, and that's where that information ended up deriving from. And he also sent a letter to the IG of the Social Security Administration, who did a study. And it was interesting. I don't want to get into partisan politics, and I hope I don't offend any listeners, but the Bush administration, which at that time was entertaining proposals to privatize part of Social Security, flipped out when that information came out, and they more or less fired the Social Security Inspector General. And they told the Social Security Administration not to release that information again, which is very regrettable. That's why we don't know 11 years later how big it is now. But it's big. It's probably much bigger.
And these are people that are actually following the procedures. You know, we've got all of these e-verify and all this kind of stuff. Well, these people are actually presenting a Social Security card, a Social Security number. They've got a valid photo ID, which is one of these driver's licenses.
The one that they've obtained fraudulently in most cases.
Right.
That's correct.
And so these are people that are working within the confines of the system with a fraudulent scheme here. And this doesn't even account for those employers that aren't really doing the proper checking and so forth. This is an amazing figure. 1.5% of total reported wages. And that's the last year we were able to get these figures, 2002.
Right.
Here we are now, 11 years down the road. I would imagine that there's probably some astronomical increase in this percentage.
There's something we don't have in a report yet because it's fairly new, which is last year the IRS acknowledged that they were now trying to deal with this problem because there are so many people who are suing the IRS or countersuing or filing claims against the IRS because the IRS has been dunning them for failing to pay their taxes on wages, which in fact the individuals that the IRS is chasing never earned those wages. They were earned, as you again say, by someone probably an illegal immigrant who not only filed, that is, had income earned against the Social Security number, but may in fact have filed a separate tax return that would requested the money back based on their alleged information. So the IRS has got two problems. One is people like yourself, perhaps, Jim, anyone at all, it could be, are suddenly discovering the IRS dunning them for taxes on money that they personally didn't earn. Somebody else earned it, often in a state 1,000 miles away. The second problem is the IRS is getting two tax returns I mean, two tax returning files, one of them claiming a lot of dependents and a lot of other issues, the other belonging to the actual individual who says, this is what I, you know, this is the money I earn and this is the taxes I owe. And but they've got two recipients, both claiming to be the same person. So it's become quite a mess.
Lots
and
of people.
It's fascinating to me that in all the discussions right now about amnesty, led primarily by our president, that these issues are not identified or discussed in the same context by the same so-called mainstream media. Because obviously they must be making an editorial decision to ignore these other rather substantial consequences of having no immigration enforcement versus amnesty. It's quite a shocking omission of reporting.
Lots of people emailing us questions. Most of our listeners listen over the computer, so we've got tons of email questions coming in. Somebody wants to know, what are the penalties of being caught doing this kind of thing? So you're someone that obtains multiple driver's licenses. Do you go to jail? What happens to you?
Well, oddly enough, there are only about five states that really do go after this problem and do penalize it. And I'll give you the names of those states on the air. There are other states where legislators keep trying to increase these penalties, but they're unable to get it through the respective judiciary committees of the state legislatures so that these penalties often... Well, anyway, we go back to the specific states. The most active state in the country on investigating, prosecuting and convicting people for this crime is the state of Ohio, followed by New York State, California, and Florida. Those states are very aggressive on pursuing these crimes when they discover them, and they're very aggressive on penalizing the people found guilty. Indiana has begun to step up their game, but Iowa also increasingly active in this area. But there are other states in which, perhaps the majority of states, in which there's really no effort to uncover the crimes. When they are uncovered, they're prosecuted usually under fairly weak state identity fraud systems. In at least 20 states, there's actually no statute that makes it against the law to defraud the DMV.
Yeah, and some good lawyer will bring that up in court, and the judge will say, well, there's not technically a law here, so we've got to find some other legal theory to charge this person. Somebody's this is an excellent question. Someone, and I'm going to just boil this down.
Sure.
There are states like Illinois, this person is saying, where because there's so many illegals and those folks are driving without insurance because they don't have a valid driver's license, what they've done is started to open it up that even if you're here illegally, we're going to, for the better community good, allow you to get a driver's license even though you're not here under any legal status. You're not a temporary worker. You're not a long-term visa holder. But we're just going to let you have a driver's license because we don't want you driving around without insurance. And this is going to be for the community good. The question here is, in a state like that, you know,
okay,
what
I, wait.
Sure,
wait,
go ahead.
Wait. First of all, it's a myth that you can't get insurance when you don't have a driver's license. It's a myth that you can't get driver's license insurance. Driving automobile insurance. It's a myth for a long time. It's a myth perpetuated by people who have other political objectives. And I will give you the names on the air of insurance companies, and I've called them myself to verify that it's that they do this, who will provide a person with no driver's license automobile insurance. Okay, are we ready for this?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Number one, Allstate. Number two, State Farm. Number three, Progressive Insurance are three major national chains that operate in virtually every state, and they will sell you automobile insurance for the automobile that you own, and you do not need a driver's license. Now, they will charge you a different premium. And I say different because it may or be higher, it may be lower, depending on who you are as an individual and what your driving record is. But if you have no driving violations, they will give you a very competitive rate. And
that is
what, guess what? Wait. Yeah, let me explain further. This has been true for at least 15 years. So the biggest lie told by people who want to advocate driver's licenses for for illegal aliens is that they can't get insurance. It's not true. Not only that, there are Mexican large insurance companies that operate in Mexico, Guatemala, Honduras, that will give someone an automobile insurance for a car that they've got duly registered in the United States if that person had insurance when they were in Mexico, Guatemala, El Salvador, etc., before they ever got here. Okay? So it's a lie, and it's a lie that's perpetuated by people at the top political levels whose real objectives, I think, are something quite different, because let's go back to Illinois. Guess what the fine is for driving without insurance in Illinois?
$1,000.
Fine. Yes.
$1,000.
$200 if you're ever charged.
Okay. So,
the reason that they have this law in Illinois was because Rahm Emanuel, the mayor of Chicago, put political pressure on the system to do that.
And that's, they're becoming more and more of a sanctuary state. Now, going back to my example,
yep,
though, and all of
yep,
that is just fantastic information. Every time you say something,
please,
I'm more shocked.
Please don't repeat it on the air that it's because they can't get insurance, because they can get insurance.
All right. Well,
guess
this
what?
Is the...
Not only illegal aliens can get insurance, but if you have a friend who's, as long as he's not a bad driver, doesn't have a driver's license, he can get insurance on his automobile that he owns.
Well, I'm going to school here. So let's go back to the example of this. Let's say that I'm a DMV worker now, and somebody walks in through the front door. They come up to the counter, and they tell me that they're from Zimbabwe, and they are there, and they would like to get a driver's license, and their name is whatever. They come up with a name. On what basis do I now have to be an expert on, like, birth documents from Zimbabwe to know
if this
person is legitimately who they say they are?
Well, you picked a good state because Zimbabwe happens to be a former British colony. And because it's a former British colony, they actually have better birth records than most states in the United States. Okay, that's why we can be quite sure that President Obama wasn't born in Kenya, because Kenya was a British colony at the time he would have been born, and they have wonderful birth records in Kenya. So the phenomenon of not having good birth records is pretty much an American one as far as most countries are concerned. I hate to sound like I'm on a soapbox, but I am. Americans would be surprised at how good the records are in places like Zimbabwe. But let's go back to your point. Frankly, under international law and under treaties the United States has signed way back in 1949, if we want to provide a driver's license to a foreign visitor, and that's what we're assuming this, for instance, you just provided this, he first of all has to provide his passport. And in his passport, if in fact he's a legal foreign visitor from Zimbabwe, he would need a visa. And that visa will be actually stapled or pasted to one of the pages of his passport, and it will tell just how long he's going to be here, and it will give a category of visa, as is he a foreign student? Is he a businessman? What's the basis of his visa? But, in fact, we've had foreign students from Zimbabwe going back to at least 40 years, because I'm an old geezer myself, and I can remember college students when I was in college who were from a variety of African countries, usually here on Fulbright scholarships. And, of course, they got driver's licenses if they could afford to get an old car and beat around the campus. And those driver's licenses in those days were given full term. But today, increasingly, because of a federal law that suggests that the visa, driver's license should be limited to the term of the visa, they're limited to a 2-year, 3-year, 4-year visa, whatever that person got. States like Florida, and I think you're in Florida, aren't you? You know, Jim?
I'm in Florida, yes, sir.
Okay. Florida, because of its tremendous tourist business and because so many foreign people like to buy homes in Florida, which they visit seasonally from Europe, has actually been a leading state, along with California, in the expertise. And so your DMV clerks, in Florida, actually receive excellent training and have since at least the 80s. There's three states that have been on this game and know their stuff very, very well since the 80s. And those three states are Florida, New York, and California, because historically they've seen so many foreign visitors, and especially foreign business visitors.
So, all right, another question hitting you with here from the email. This is a great question. I love my listeners. They think of things that I would never have thought of. Someone wants to know about pedophiles.
Oh, yeah, it's a big issue.
Yeah, you become a sexual offender. You've got to register. You can't be too close to a school. People have to know where you're at, all of these rules. But maybe you just decide the day after you get released from jail to just come up with a new name for yourself and go get a new driver's license.
Well, first of all, this is a subject I'm very familiar with because of my former work for the Congress as an investigator, because while I was still working there, the Adam Walsh Act passed. And the Adam Walsh Act is the federal pedophile law. It was the first one at the national level because so many states had no laws addressing pedophiles that Congress felt they needed to have a national law. So that was what caused all pedophiles to be registered. Once you're convicted of a pedophilic crime, the states have no choice but to register you. Each state was allowed some discretion on this, but in almost all states, the pedophile registry is maintained by the DMV. Interestingly enough. Okay, that was a state. Those are state decisions. Why? Because most states recognize the DMVs are the best at screening people to verify identities. So the main thing that we see with there is a study underway at Utica College right now. The results have not been posted, but I'm on the advisory board at Utica College as Identity Center, and I know that what they're determining is that pedophiles tend to be very careful about this because they don't want to lose their driving privileges. So the number of pedophiles who actually violate the terms of their parole, according to this Utica study, which is to be published next year, are relatively small. And when they do violate, the main thing they do is abscond. That is, they fail to report as they're required by their parole system, etc., and they depart for they leave for places unknown. In other words, they go to Maine. Maybe that DMV director is still up there. But I'm saying the DMV director in Maine is excellent and is a totally different person today. I happen to know her, and she's excellent. But probably Maine would be a bad choice and a bad destination. But the point is, they try to find a place where standards are low for identity, and they do try, presumably, to get new identities. But that's a small percentage of pedophiles. So, and of course, it's probably the most dangerous percentage.
All right, next emailer wants to know, what should a parent do to protect their child's identity from being stolen? Are there any steps that they can take?
Absolutely. First of all, let me just suggest that you go to our website, www.secure-license.org. We have a whole section in there about what to do. Furthermore, we have a... You can call us and ask for our information that we only send. We don't put it on the web. We don't put it on the web because we don't want identity thieves to use detailed information as a recipe book to go out and stalk kids and steal their information. Do you follow me?
Yes.
So we will send you our four-page detailed brochure and our STOP literature, which tells you what to do. It's really a... laundry list of things you can do. But our website is fairly informative, and if you go to our website and look for child identity theft, KIDS, Keeping Identity Safe for Children, we'll direct you there. And since people are hitting you online, that's my recommendation. If you have any questions, we have another website that we're putting up on this called ID Child Now, which it's out there, but we've got more work to do there where we're going to try and get better and better information up on that site.
All right, I'm going to hit you with one last question, and then we'll have you give your website out again. Somebody wants to know here about their bank account. You know, what can they do to make sure that their bank account is safe? Are there any specific banks to be aware of or some that are better than others as far as someone being able to into your bank account?
Okay, well, one of them and I'll probably get sued for this, one of them that has received numerous notices and citations for failing to do this from the controller of the currency and others is the Bank of America, which is who I bank with, which is why I actually pay an obscure company extra money to do what you were talking about, monitor claims on my credit. So I do have credit and bank account insurance myself. I'm not paid to do this, and I wouldn't provide a endorsement on the air. But you will. It is advisable to the reason I do it is because I am out in the air. I'm a public personality, and along with children, I'm going to be targeted more often than a person who's just has a regular profile, because people hear my name and they go, oh, maybe he has some money, so we'll try and target his account. So, and that may happen to you too, Jim, be aware.
Yeah.
But the answer to the person who's emailed it in is, it is not unwise if you are an active banker and you have a lot of banking transactions to get an insurance monitoring, pay someone to monitor your activity. Banks in general are getting much better at this. Three banks that I will give you on air who have excellent fraud units and detection units and are really on their game on this are JP Morgan, Chase Manhattan Bank, and SunTrust down in Florida, since you're in a Florida state. Those are three banks I know that have sophisticated fraud units that do monitor their account holders' accounts and will, frankly, mess with you if they think something's going on. Sometimes you may find it inconvenient because they see unusual transactions. They'll call you up and say, did you do this? And they'll... You're like, damn it. I did it. Leave me alone. But
I run into that a lot with PayPal. I have to call them if I go on a trip and I'm away from my area, I have to call them in advance or they'll freeze everything. So,
Do you know the story on that?
No.
PayPal got scammed big time by hackers about 5 or 6, maybe 7 or 8 years ago.
And so this
so
is
they
their...
ended up having to settle, have huge litigation costs. And so they, their owner, who's a relatively young man, really busted his rear then to really beef that up so that would never happen again.
All right, as we close it out, Brian, I want to make sure people have all of your good contact information. Brian Zimmer is the president of the Coalition for a Secure Driver's License, and you can get all of his information through us. You can contact me. But, Brian, one last time, tell people what they can get at your website and how to get in touch with you. If you have a phone number you'd like to give out as well, that's
sure.
Fine.
Our website is www.secure-license.org. Our phone number, if you'd simply like to call us, if there's something else you want, we do have about 20 publications that we reserve for our members, but we will provide them if you do call us and ask for our publications list and want one mailed to you. And the phone number is 202-312-1540, and the person who normally does the mailings of those publications is named Craig Hale. So if you want to call and ask for Craig, he'd probably be delighted to get your have his name recognized.
All right.
But thank you very much, Jim.
All right, Brian, thank you. Fascinating interview. And, boy, I'll tell you what, I learned a lot in listening to him tonight, and I hope you did as well. And that's what we're trying to do with our guests that we bring on every week. Bring on different people, you know, interesting people that have something different to say that you may have never heard anywhere else before. And Brian Zimmerman, a fascinating guest. Lots of great information, by the way, at their website. I spent some time this afternoon over at their website as well. Hey, as we run out of time this week, remember you can get in touch with me through the website, christianmoney.com. christianmoney.com, or you can send me an email by going to you just open up your email and send me an email to jim@christianmoney.com, and I do answer all of my emails personally, believe it or not. I do, and there's lots of them, but I do answer them. I do read them all. jim@christianmoney.com. We also have a new feature over at christianmoney.com. If you go there and look on the right hand sidebar, there's a way now that you can leave us a voicemail right over the internet while you're on the website. That's a neat deal, too. So, and I do listen to all those messages myself and respond to those as well. So check all that out at christianmoney.com. Make sure you're on the email list, because remember, Wednesday night, I'm going to be doing that free online workshop on Bitcoin. So don't miss out on that. Be sure you're on the email list over at christianmoney.com so that you get invited to that. That's this coming Wednesday night, which is April, what is that, the 10th. 8th, 9th, 10th. That's right, April the 10th. All right, guys, thanks so much for joining us. This is Jim Paris, here as always, to help you make the most of God's money. Talk to you next time.
You've been listening to Jim Paris Live. For more information about our program, visit christianmoney.com or send an email to jim@christianmoney.com. Join us next week for another live program.